Welcome to the Business Book Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia, Canada. Each week, we feature the best interviews from the popular Business Book Talk podcast show. The interviews span a wide range of topics, including new business theory, sales techniques, C-suite strategy, self-improvement, small business tips, big business trends, and many more topics. Bob Garlick's casual approach to interviews helps each author open up and talk about their book so you get a better idea about the topic, the book's core idea, and how to get the most from the book. So if you're in business or studying for a degree in business, you should consider listening to what these authors have to say. You never know. You might discover that their book will help you reach your business goals.
Before we get onto the show, let's give Ed Bickert a bit of credit here. He is one of Canada's great guitarists, and we will be trying to feature Canadian jazz artists as some filler for the show, so sit back and enjoy the rest of this too. I'm Bob Garlick, your host. Welcome to Season 3 of the Business Book Talk podcast. On each show, we will discover another great book that can help you improve yourself and your business. So, I invite you to sit back and enjoy this week's author and find out what makes this book a great read. Hi everybody, it's Bob again, and I've got another wonderful book in front of me, Smart Working, Creating the Next Wave by Anne-Marie McEwen. I have her on the line, and you're way over in France in your beautiful looking farmhouse. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing recently.
Oh, very recently, in the past 2 weeks, I was over in London doing the book launch, and that was great fun. Herman Miller, the furniture manufacturers and designers, very kindly offered me their premises in the Aldwych in London. Very posh it was too, very enjoyable. And it was a conversation. I wanted to just get a bunch of people together who had been part of my journey, in fact, along the way, and also who I see as fellow travellers as we move forward. So that was 2 weeks ago, and then I've just come back from a week in Paris, and I was at the Enterprise 2.0 Summit, and that was very interesting. I love conferences, not because of the content. It's always the conversation. It's always about meeting new friends, old friends, you know, catching up. And for me, it was very interesting to look at the state of the Enterprise 2.0 / social business. In other words, you know, the fact that businesses are pushing forward or the pioneers are with these social technologies, it was very interesting for me to hear what the big players in the field are saying. So is that enough for the moment?
Oh, that was wonderful. the big players in the field. Now, were they basically saying what you're saying in the book, or are they still on catch up, or they just have no clue?
Well, now, it would be very arrogant of me to say that they're playing catch up.
Mm.
But in fact, they're playing catch up. let me rephrase it.
Sure.
I've been watching these conversations develop online, and Andrew McAfee wrote a book, I think it was way back in 2008, 2009, called Enterprise 2.0. And then the Enterprise 2.0 movement seems to have been somewhat replaced, I think, by the social business, and IBM are very much behind social business. And really what both of these movements are saying is that these phenomenal technologies from a business point of view connect... really, they connect informal knowledge and knowledge inside companies to external sources. And really, it's a phenomenal opportunity that businesses have at the moment to take the capability that they've got inside their companies and, if you like, turbocharge it and plug it into... Can I give you a small example of that?
Absolutely.
Would that be helpful?
Oh, yeah, we
All
love
right.
those.
Okay. Okay, years ago, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I employed the services of a young animator. Now, I got him through the local university, and I said to the university, look, you know, he's only 1920. He doesn't have to come and work in my home office, does he? And they said, yes, he does. I felt so sorry for him because I thought, oh, he's only young and it's me. And, you know, we surely could have done our work, him at home, and we doing what we're currently doing now. Anyway, so the university insisted that I have him come and work in my home office. What I knew he was doing first thing in the morning, he'd come in, we'd both say hello to each other, a cup of coffee, talk about the work for the day, and off he went. Now, the first thing he would do was bring up Skype. And in doing that, he was bringing up his entire network. So... What I knew was that he was using these people to stay in touch socially, and I have no problem with that whatsoever. What I soon realized was that when I was getting a piece of work in progress from him, it had been fired out to his network of animators. So I was employing him, and I was employing his entire network. And I got, for the price of one animator, I got him and all the input and suggestions from his colleagues. Now, I think that is phenomenal. I think that is absolutely outrageously phenomenal. And I think that's only one indication of the promise of these technologies. Can I go back to your question now about the big player, the big players? Andrew McAfee, I remember at the time thinking, and the discussion was that it was all about the technologies, it was all about social technologies, and I was saying, no, it's not. It's about what these technologies enable. It takes all the capability that you have, all the skills that you have in your company, and turbocharges it. So I think what's happening now is that the big players are beginning to, well, not beginning to, but the conversations are now around, it's not about the technology, it's about the culture of knowledge sharing, knowledge discovery, and it's about how these technologies open up. And I think particularly for small businesses, you know, small businesses, in my experience, they're very socially integrated. You know, everyone knows everyone else, that's for sure. But I think it's the fact that the internet is a big copying machine, and knowledge that used to just be privileged, you know, for those who could pay for it, those who could pay for the big consultants, I mean, who needs to do that anymore? There's so much out there that's free. There's so much that's quality. There's so much that can be curated. And I think that that's basically the promise for smaller businesses. It's the ability to get hold of state-of-the-art knowledge and trends through their networks as it's happening. And I also think these technologies give small businesses the capability of punching way above their size. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Oh no, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I've worked in organizations that, you know, were trying to do this, but they did this internally, where you would have meetings, and it would be meetings would have, instead of like the marketing department to have five marketing people, you would have two marketing people, and then you'd have two engineers, and you would have two, you know, one person from the law department. And we would have this meeting, and the conversations were fantastic and very productive, because when you came out of the meeting, you had a very good idea on a global sense for that organization, exactly where you stood, and you could action things much, much quicker.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to write this book? You know, you're doing a lot of consulting and stuff like that. You said, "Oh my gosh, I need people to really get it." So what stimulated you in that direction?
Several things. Okay, one was being online. When I discovered these technologies, these social tools, in about 2004, 2005, I knew they were going to be phenomenal. In what way, I didn't know. So I have been listening for a long time. I've been reading blogs for a long time and listening to conversations. And going back to the major players missing a trick or playing catch up, I thought there's more to it than this. There's more to it than this. So that was one thing. I always knew it was a bit about business processes. It was about people participating in continuous improvement. All the things that we knew powered the last fundamental shift in management practices, which was the shift from traditional to agile manufacturing. Now, the conversations that I was listening to my mind, were missing this a lot, and I felt the conversations were impoverished as a result. But the real trigger for writing the book was when the Chartered Institute of Personnel Development here in the UK, in combination with Capgemini, did some research around smart working and proclaimed smart working as a new paradigm. Well, that was like, for me, that was like, you know, light blue touch paper and retire. Because I thought, no. There is a legacy of learning. There is a legacy of experience when businesses struggled to make the transition to new ways of doing things. It's not easy. It's rewarding. And ultimately, it keeps your business viable, i.e. stops it from going bust. So that was the reason for writing the book. It was to represent hidden voices. And my reason for doing that was to actually say to practitioners, look, if you are at the moment going through a point of transition that you need to mobilize all the skills and capabilities at your disposal because your competition is biting, or you see the advantage in doing this, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. We are in different times, but the lessons of 20 odd years ago, you know, from about the mid 1980s onwards, remain as relevant now as they do. And that's something I picked up from this Enterprise 2.0 summit that I went to in Paris last week, that the same issues are coming up again and again. So different contexts, different times, similar issues. Now, if I was going to say, if a business wants to go ahead and reinvent the wheel, you know, if there is some pull towards novelty, then fine, take the time to go and do that. If you want to shortcut all that and to say, right, here are principles and insights, which if you interpret them for your own context, make sense of them for your own practical use and experiment with them, then here are some lessons, some insights that might help you as you do that. So that's why it was really.
Well, you know, that's a pretty in-depth answer. And you know what? It does reflect a lot of the opinions I get from different authors that, you know what? It is a little pointless to reinvent the wheel. And a lot of the knowledge that's out there, a lot of the books that are out there enable you to actually have a look at what's been going on, like almost like the history of what's going on, and saying what is similar and what is totally different. And I think that the social aspect has never really changed. It's the tools that have changed and the massive amount of opportunities that have changed, where 20 years ago, my opportunity was to join a chamber of commerce, shake some hands, go out for coffee, do lunches, blah, blah, blah. Today, I can go global and it costs me less. So, you know, with that in mind, I mean, and you've used the word, you know, social business, smart working, creating the next wave. When you say the next wave, what is the next wave? Is that the next wave of communication, or is that the next wave of businesses?
No. Oh, good question. Now, what I meant by that was the next wave of mobilizing skills and capabilities. I believe that many businesses, and I would probably say most, really don't understand or don't appreciate the depth of skills, the range of skills that are at their disposal. You know, that somehow when people come to work, they leave the rich experience of, you know, their home lives and their social lives at the door. And I think that's what I mean about the next wave. The first wave was really about, as I saw it, people on the shop floor in manufacturing companies, you know, the ones who'd been overlooked. What the Japanese did was to say, actually, these are the people who know your customer base inside out. They're at the front line. They get to hear firsthand the good stories and the bad stories. More than that, these people know their machines inside out. They know their processes inside out. They know each other inside out. And really, the first wave was about taking all that hidden capability and encouraging it. So really, the first wave was all about how the Japanese methods really took overlooked capability. And that was the basis of waste reduction, of mass customization, you know, of agility in responding to customers. Now, that's the next wave. Smart working for me is about, it's not hard. It's just about saying there are things that businesses need, and it just so happens that what businesses need to thrive is the same thing that people need. People need to learn. They need to participate. They need to be asked. They need to be recognized. They need to be given meaningful work. If the work itself isn't meaningful, they find meaning in each other, i.e. in their relationships. Now, it just seems to me that the next wave builds on what we should have known, that people are phenomenal. I am, you are, everyone is. And I think that social technologies just now take all of our creativity, all of our capabilities, all of the, you know, all of the ingenuity that each and every one of us has, and turbocharges it. It augments us. We become cyborgs. You know, we become extended by these social technologies. And really, I think the next wave is about saying, here we have phenomenal people with all their capabilities and creativity. Now you plug them into other equally gifted people, creative people. And before you know it, as a business, you've just got, I believe anyway, that you've just got this phenomenal capability. And I think that businesses that wake up to the fact that on the whole, people aren't really that. Well, we are complicated, of course we are, and we're complex. Nobody can deny that. But Dan Pink, as you probably know, he didn't do the research, but he scoured the research in his book Drive to come up with a shorthand to say that we're looking for autonomy, self-determination, we're looking for purpose, and what was the third thing? But he broke it down to, you know, meaning and purpose and autonomy. Yeah, meaning, purpose, and autonomy. I think that's it. But essentially, that's it. And I think the next wave is that businesses understand that we have psychological needs, that we have learning needs, and that these social technologies now really give them the capability of expanding on that. I'm not making a good job of this, but I think the if you think about the last wave, which was continuous improvement, that's really, you know, the Japanese methods relied on continuous improvement. Now, I think with the addition of these social technologies, which now connect us so globally to so many other sources of capability, that now becomes collective intelligence. You know, it's just realizing that businesses have at their disposable, just untold energies and capabilities, and it's up to them whether they want to recognize this and energize it. I mean, you probably know the research on employee engagement, and there's a much quoted piece of research, and it goes back to 2007 now, and it was Towers Perrin. And they did a survey where they asked almost 90,000 people, that's 90, people in 18 countries. And the results that they found on levels of employee engagement, and by that they meant discretionary effort, was appalling. It was just absolutely unforgivable. Now, to me, I think that's not only bad business, but the idea that there's so much discretionary effort that people are willing to put in, but the one thing that they found then was that it was whole systems of leadership and learning that were inadequate. And that's what I mean by the next wave, is to take all that we know about people and what motivates them, by and large, and it's not difficult. And then to say, well, if you then plug that into the understanding that engaging work is learning work, is work where you get recognition, and then to say, well, part of that story going forward is social technologies that connect us to opportunities, connect us to new knowledge, connect us to sources of help. You know, just connect us. I'm going to stop now because I feel as though I'm rambling, but I don't mean to ramble.
You're trying to get a very complex thought over, across, and I think a lot of it is maybe in the future. It will seem simple, but now it's very complex because you've got two different types, or maybe even three different types of management. You've got old management that's holding on to the power, and then you've got up and coming management, which is basically moving into the new power structure, and they're being basically cherry-picked by the guys that are in power to keep the old guard going. And then you get the young guys that are howling and screaming, saying, hey, come on, you guys are three decades behind, get it together. And it's organizations, I think, in the next 5 or 10 years that listen to the youth and listen to the middle managers and move forward and become much more agile that will be on top and will have the power. And then, you know, we're in transition mode. It's very exciting. But like you said, it's the companies that recognize this is an awesome opportunity. And it's very rare, in a 100-year span that as a smaller organization that's maybe number 4 or number 3, that they have the opportunity to basically leapfrog all the way to number 1. And I think this is the power that's in books like this.
I think there's something else as well, and this is something that I think is connected with the or an outcome of the connected age, and that is, if you think about change that's happened in the past, it's been instigated usually at the top of the organization by chief executive or the production director or the HR director, but someone at the, you know, at the top level. I think something interesting is really happening here. And I actually, I think I quoted it in the book, that when we had the bombings here in London, I think it was in 2005, that someone from the BBC said that was the day that the BBC changed from being a broadcaster to being a facilitator of news, because everything that was coming out from the underground and people trapped under, you know, in the tube, it was people with their mobile phones that were capturing this. Now, I think so you've had whole industries like the music industry being absolutely changed. You've had broadcasting being absolutely changed. Now, also, I think this has implications for how change is going to happen, because I think that now we have the possibility of people working inside for an organisation. And these people have influence over a part of the organisation, so a division, a unit, a hospital ward. They have influence. They can't change the whole company, but they can have some sort of influence over the part of the company that they're responsible for. Now, I think that Ewan Semple, I don't know if you know Ewan. Ewan blogs at theobvious.com. Mm-hmm. And Ewan used to work at the the BBC, in fact. Anyway, he talks about Trojan mice. So, you know, you have these people who can go outside of their companies, link into other people like themselves, people who are dissatisfied with the status quo, or who know that there are just more satisfying and more better ways of working for their own benefit, and actually also to the benefit of their companies. So what they can do is they can go outside, they can link in with peers who are like-minded, they can explore together outside of their businesses, and then when they get the courage and when they get the knowledge, they can bring it back in like Trojan mice back into their companies, and they can start the process of change within that bit over which they have influence. Now, I think this is something quite significant and quite phenomenal. So the change is now coming from outside in. And that, again, it could be such a beneficial development, you know, for businesses who recognise that and recognise that there are people like star performers who are not part of the elite, but they're just driven by their values, they're driven by the knowledge that there's better ways of doing things, there are more satisfying ways of doing things, and that now they have the opportunity to do that.
The Business Book Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia, Canada. Each week, we feature the best interviews from the popular Business Book Talk podcast show.
Let's talk a little bit about your book. Is this a book that you should read from cover to cover, or can you skip around in it?
Oh, I think you can skip around in it. I think it has to be said that I wrote the book for myself. I wrote the book to work out what I thought. And my hope is that in doing that, the others who themselves are curious about the way things are developing and the fact that, you know, we do have the emerging economies and you know, different trends. You mentioned Generation Y without, you know, the up-and-coming young generation. Things can't stay the same. So I wrote the book for myself. I think you can skip around it. I think if you wanted, you could go straight to part three, which is about, you know, doing things better or differently. And parts one and two really are the justification. They're the rationale. Part two is about workplace trends. Now, I've been, for the past, what, 5 or 6 years, I've been working with the director of workplace innovation for a big American corporate. And she and I met at a conference and hit it off. And for the past, what, 5 or 6 years, we've had a network. And what we do is we bring together senior people who wouldn't normally collide. So we bring together senior IT, senior HR, and senior facilities managers, because we reason that work, you can't talk about work and new ways of working and the changing world of work, and if you haven't got the technology, the place where people work, and the HR systems, you know, coming together. So that's part two. And part two, I drew heavily on all of those conversations to just look at a variety of trends, workplace trends, you know, things that are coming over the hill. And for many businesses, or for some businesses, they've already arrived. So, for example, you may be having a problem recruiting talent. You may be, you know, not being able to recruit the right skills. Now, you know, the implication of trying to attract the brightest and the most energetic, well, these people are demanding, and one of their demands typically would be access to these technologies that connect them to their peers. So I think, you know, part one of the book is, if you're interested, if anyone's interested in looking at deep roots that, you know, that started off this process of businesses designing for mobilizing talent. The second bit is if you're interested in, you know, current workplace trends. And then the third part is the very practical part, is, well, so what, you know, how would you then take these insights and do something with them? Mm. How would you make them practical?
So it's almost three books in one.
In a way, although it's, there's a thread, there's very definitely a trajectory. And in fact, that was the whole point of the book, was to say, look, in amongst the declarations of new paradigms, in amongst the declarations of novelty, sure, it is. We are in a world that, well, look at it post 2007, you know, after the global financial collapse, no one can ever say that we're in a certain world. But even before that, you know, we'd started, we had the emerging economies, we've got you know, massive demographic changes, not just Generation Y, but I'm part of the baby boomer. I am part of that generation, you know, heading towards, I'm mid-50s. There are many, many, many of us, you know, heading towards retirement. That is creating a phenomenal set of issues around how do you stop all that experience and all that knowledge walking out the door? Well, actually, social technologies, that's a good one, wouldn't it be? So, you know, as people retire, they become your alumni, if you like. You know, they stay on site. They may no longer be employed by you, but keep your relationships with these people good and sweet. And you've got them for life. You've got them post-retirement. So it's not really three books in one, but it is saying that the world that we're now heading into is scary, but actually it's not that scary because we've been here before. Mm-hmm. And it's meant to be reassuring. It's meant to be saying, yes, we are in a different world, but you know, if you do have to change, if you do have to transform the way you do things, we've done it before. It's not meaning it's not going to be easy, but it has been done. You know, people have done it before. It's not beyond you. You know, it's not beyond your business. It's not beyond your. It's not beyond your people.
There we are. All right. So that you've been involved with businesses for many, many, many years. You've been working on this. You're starting to put all your knowledge together. What was the aha moment for you with something really crystallized when you wrote the book? Can be more than one, because a lot of times I had three.
I'll tell you, my biggest crystallization is the way you can know things. And I think creating the next wave, what I'm saying is the only way you're going to know is get out there and do it. You know, get out there and do it. So for me, there was a crystallization in that you can know something in your head and you can know something by experience, which I did. And in fact, I talk about this in the postscript to the book, that I wrote this book from 15 years of experience, both in the UK and in Russia. And when I pitched to the publisher the idea for the book, that was easy. Writing the sample chapter, that was easy. Getting down to writing the book and making an argument that took a thread across time and across disciplines, that was not easy. And I think the lesson, what crystallized for me in doing that, is that people banter the word creativity around without really understanding what it means. And I finished the book by saying that my friend Tim Caswell has an intervention that he does with businesses called Write Your Own Book. And I thought I knew what he was talking about. So it wasn't actually until I started to do it that I discovered that creativity is challenging. So I think for me, that was one moment of crystallization, is that, yeah, I feel, I don't want to fool anybody. I'm telling people that if they do action what I'm suggesting in the book, in other words, experiment and create the next wave of moving into new ways of working, it is very stimulating and very satisfying, but ultimately it's no walk in the park. And I think it is dishonest of anyone who writes a business book and says, if you do 1, 2, 3 step ABC, then this will happen. No, it's hard. So I don't know if that's one of the examples, if you meant about something crystallizing. That certainly crystallized for me in a big way.
Well, okay, then what I'd like to know is, you know, when somebody's attempting to create the next wave for their organization, do you think the knowledge in the book will just lead them in the right direction, get them on best practices, have a little bit of history behind it, but then in their organization, they're going to have a hybrid of the solution? It's not going to be crystal exactly the same.
No. There's no blueprint. There are examples of what has worked for other people. But you may look at two contexts that look exactly the same, but you've got different people and nothing is ever the same. So what the book will offer are insights that they're what I've been calling principles. Your principles, things that every business is going to have to face. Adaptation, what happens when you try to change and challenge the status quo? So what the book would offer would be insights as to what other people have found useful. That's not going to say that that's going to be useful for you. If it makes any sense, when I used to work with senior executives at the university and in consulting, I feel a bit like Mary Poppins. You know, I've got this big carpet bag, and in this carpet bag, I will sit down and have a conversation. And I think it's the same thing with people who read the book. You know, I expect the reader to have a conversation with the book. I don't expect the reader to regurgitate what's in here. My hope is that the book will help people interrogate themselves, you know, their own business, where they think it is, what they think their needs are, what they think the gaps are, what they think the enablers will be, what they think the barriers will be. You know, that's what chapter 9 is all about. You're trying to lead people through that. But ultimately, hybrid is exactly what it is, because each and every business is unique. Even though my, you know, a small business in character may look like, you know, another similar, the contexts are entirely different. The people are entirely different. So what I'm suggesting is that the book offers principles and insights, things you have to pay attention to. You have to pay attention to people. What do they need? What are they going to find, you know, satisfying? And then to actually have conversations inside the business with all the other departments, or, you know, with peers inside, to have a dialogue. And again, it's all about, where do we think we are? Where do we think we want to get to? How do we know? What are our performance indicators? And these things have to be done uniquely by every business or every manager, you know, who reads this book. Is about understanding the things that will have to be paid attention to, but also understanding that there will be skill involved in applying. It's almost like stepping back and saying, you know, right, here's our business in all its complexity. Who are our customers? Are our customers changing? If they're changing, in what way? Are our customers becoming more powerful? Are they having conversations online about our products and our services? Is that the case? What are we going to do about it? Okay, so that's customers. Our people, do we have skills and capabilities that we think are going to take us into this future? The book is really... it's not a framework and it's not a set of guidelines. It's a set of hints about the sort of systems, the sort of things that businesses could look at. But then it's ultimately up to every business to carve out their own action plan, if you like. But as I say, chapter 9, my hope for that was to ask questions, to help businesses and to help... executives, you know, people with responsibility for taking the business forward, to help them scope what it is they need to do and to ask effective questions. And then once they've done that, it's not about copying what other people have done, but it's just about saying that they're not on their own and that there are things that have worked for other people that, in fact, might try as well.
Well, that's
so kind of, it's a toolbox, really, is what it is.
Well, it kind of answers my next question, which I was going to say, what's the biggest roadblock for a manager once they've read this book and say, wow, how do I proceed? And really, you proceed however you think it works best with the personalities in your department.
Well, it also proceeds with... Again, it comes back to customer focus, really, doesn't it? You know, what's happening with your customer base? And Is it changing? Are their expectations changing? Are we up to the job of in the business? Do we have the capabilities to meet the changing demands of customers? I think it's quite an overwhelming thing, you know, to say creating the next wave. So the way in which I found it to be effective is to start with a specific business strategic thing that you need to do. And there's a chapter in the book called Do Better or Do Differently. So there's various ways of going about it. You know, if you're a chief executive, you could, you know, go after the big, we need to change everything. And I think that's a very scary thing to do. What you can do is pick, choose a business process, a current business process that delivers to customers, and then look at, really just look at how that process is changing. Does it have to change? And to start to do something that you think you can improve. So take something like, I don't know, on-time delivery to customers, for example. You know, that's off the top of my head. You know, if that needs to be improved, then a good place to start is something that's very meaningful to the business, and something that's meaningful to the business but actually could be improved. And then to analyse with peers inside the company what people think is the root of that deficiency or that thing that could be improved. Is it something that the company could be doing that it's currently not doing? And hopefully there will be some ideas within the book that will give inspiration. But that's the place to start. The place to start is with something tangible, but with something meaningful and something around value creation, something that's going to improve either the customer experience or improve the way in which the way in which people work towards delivering to customers. Mm. You know, it's very difficult without an example to explain that to you. Can I give you one example?
Oh, yeah, please, go ahead. Yeah.
Although I wrote Creating the Next Wave in the belief that social technologies are going to be significant, and I agree with that. Yeah, I absolutely believe that. That actually is not the source of it. So one of the examples that I've written about in the book is, in fact, a senior nurse, and she took over responsibility for a ward. This was several years ago, and it was chaotic. And she set about changing the performance culture on the ward. Now, what she wanted to do was ultimately to improve on her ward patient experience. But she went at it by looking at why she felt the ward that she had taken over was chaotic. And one of the things that she was very unhappy with was the rate of absenteeism. Now, that had been a situation which had grown over many years, and the behaviour of nurses, not all nurses, but some, had gone unchallenged. So that's where she started. She started with something that no one else saw as particularly problematic, but from her own set of values about how things should be done, she thought that on the ward, this wasn't good. So she started with a very, very prominent... She actually just said, right, everyone, listen to me. All these days off you've been taking, not having any more of it. Absence management, that's where we're going to start. Now, it so happened that she'd got a nurse manager who'd come into post just at the same time as she decided to do what she was going to do. and the partnership between them. That's what kicked it off. So it was having something that needed, in her view, it was something that she found very dissatisfying. It didn't sit well with her values. She didn't think it was right that these people were having, you know, so much time off that was unaccounted for. By doing that one small thing, that set in motion a whole train of events, one of which was that the people who were being held to account for their absentee records left. And she really worried about this because at one point the ward was down on resourcing levels quite significantly. And her new nursing manager said, don't worry about it, although this seems like a disaster. In fact, what's happening is good, because now what you can do is you can start to recruit in your own image. So she did that. And then once she started to recruit, she recruited for attitude more than aptitude, because her view is you can always train people, but if you get people with the right attitude to begin with. And so there was a snowballing effect of having done that one particular thing. It gave her courage to then tackle the next thing, to tackle the next thing, to tackle the next thing. And then before you knew it, within 2 years, she had taken the ward from being one of the worst performing in the hospital to one of the highest performing along many indicators. So they were regarded as the most collaborative. They had the lowest infection rate. They had the lowest absentee rate. They had got such a solid commitment to each other, the staff, this is, that they had nurses battering on their door to come and work there. So that's what I mean about start with something, start with something tangible, and start with a process that you believe can be done better or be done differently.
Mm. Well, you know, that is an awesome, awesome story. And it really, I think, crystallized what this whole interview is about, checking out Smart Working, Creating the Next Wave. Before we go, I just wanted to ask, Anne-Marie, what would you recommend people do if they want to find out more about the book? Is there a website or place they can go?
The best place to go really is www.thesmartworkcompany.com, because one of the things I'm going to try and get off the ground is an open innovation forum where people can just talk about. The book is, I've tried to write it in a very accessible fashion, but it nevertheless is, it's a research-based book. And it's written with a certain amount of academic language. It's not an academic, well, it is an academic book, but as I say, I've tried to steer away from jargon as much as possible. Now, the next source of help, one of the things I want to do then is to, on the smartworkcompany.com, on the open innovation site, is to just bring together people, anyone who wants to just come and have conversations. We've got discussion forums that I want to get off the ground. I just want to create not only a bit of buzz, but I want to create a place where I can point people to other sources of help. So that would be a good place. There's not a website for the book as such, but my intention is I want to try and attract as many of these nurses, as I was talking about, not specifically nurses, but people who are daring to do something different, people who are daring to say we're moving into a new world, and people who want to understand how they can use social technologies, but not only the social technologies, but the understanding of, you know, business process effectiveness. How do we mobilize people so that we create the best possible outcomes for business at the same time as creating the best possible outcomes for people. So I'm hoping that my my online forum will be a source of information, a source of jumping off points to elsewhere on the internet. You know, go and have a look at that blog, go and have a look at this report, go and have a look at, and to do it in a very conversational way. Not the formal way that the book is, but in a way of saying, right, in the book, we have all these insights. And then actually to give people an opportunity to say, what did you mean by that? I didn't understand that. And to have a conversation around explaining more about you know, what I'm trying to communicate. But also just therefore to give people, to continue my Mary Poppins theme, you know, the bag that I used to drag around when I worked with senior executives, to have a virtual online Mary Poppins bag where people can come and go, that's interesting, that's useful, I'll try that, that didn't work, I'll try something else. And then hopefully to do it with peers like themselves who are learning not only about the insights, but then how to make them practical, actionable, and what to do when they come up against barriers, because, you know, sure as eggs is eggs, that's going to happen, you know. And what are we all doing to help? So it's about self-help, really, but it's about self-help and doing it together.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like you're practicing what you preach.
Hopefully. I'm trying very hard, actually, but I am, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for spending some time with us today explaining the book, Smart Working, Creating the Next Wave. Awesome. And I'm sure people are really going to love the book.
Bob, you're a star. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Please join us each week or listen anytime on SoundCloud under CJSF 90.1. If you're hungry for more interviews, check out www.businessbooktalk.com for a fresh business book every Monday morning. If you have a business book you think we should cover, please contact us through Facebook/businessbooktalk.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed our first show. And to wrap it off, let's listen to a little bit more of the Oscar Peterson Trio, Stan Getz belting out Blues for Herky. And this was recorded back in 1957.